What's up, everybody? Will here at Schedule Fly. This is another episode in our Timeless Advice series. And this comes from our second book. It's with Seth Gross of two restaurants, Bull City Burger and Brewery, as well as Pompieri Pizza, both in Durham, North Carolina. And this has to do, this is going to be a longer episode because it's a long passage in the book where we were having a conversation about the ingredients in our food and the fact that Seth and his team stand by certain principles of what they will and won't use as ingredients in their foods and why. And it gets into the idea of how important it is to have a very clear mission and a clearly defined mission and something you can believe in and stand behind and what that means to your team and what that means to your customers. So really, really fascinating conversation that we had. Always respected and admired Seth for taking a stand on the things that are really important to him. Before we get into that, this episode is sponsored by Schedule Fly. And if you have a restaurant or a bar or a brewery or a distillery or a coffee shop or ice cream shop or a boutique hotel or any type of hospitality business, and scheduling and communication is not easy and clean and simple and super efficient for you and your team, check out ScheduleFly. We've been doing this 15 years. We started in 2007. We have about 6,000 customers today, and we've grown this business through word of mouth, one customer at a time. We only serve independent businesses. We don't serve chains. We don't serve any, you know, really large organizations. We serve folks that have, you know, from one location to 3, 5, 10. I think our largest ones might have 15. And what we provide is a very simple web-based employee scheduling and communication software, and we back it up with absolutely legendary customer support. We have a 30-day free trial, so you can go sign up. You can use it anytime. If you have any questions, my cell phone number is right there on the trial sign-up page. I'm happy to help anytime. Call me or text me. There's no credit card, so there's no commitment. But if scheduling and communication is not easy for you and your team, if you're on pencil and paper or Excel or something like that, and you've had issues or it's laborsome or time-consuming or communication breakdowns happen, give us a shot. We'd love to have a chance to earn your business. This episode's also sponsored by Flip, and that's FLYP. You can find them at flipmoney.com, or you can find the Flip app in the App Store. It is an app-based banking tool, and it's fantastic. So Flip, they don't have any branches. They have an app, and it comes with a checking account with no fees and no minimum balances and a debit card. And when you use that debit card, you open your Flip app and you spin your Flip wheel. And each time you use the card, you spin the Flip wheel and you might win 1% cash back, 2%, 5%, 10%. You can win up to 110% cash back. And so it makes, you know, it's sort of the way that credit cards do rewards, and almost every credit card has rewards now. I don't know of other debit cards. I'm sure there may be some, but I don't know of any that do rewards, and Flip does. And some of the keys here being that they don't have a required minimum balance for your checking account. So there's no way that they're going to hit you with these little nickel and dime fees. If you get direct deposit, you can often get your pay up to 2 days early, and they are a partner of ours at Schedule Fly, and we're very proud to have that partnership and really excited about what they're doing. So check them out, FLYP, flipmoney.com, or go find Flip in the App Store. If you use the promo code Schedule Fly and you put money in there and you spend $100 in the first 30 days, they're just going to give you $20 for free. No questions asked. Spend $100 in the first 30 days, you get $20 extra. Thank you all for checking out both ScheduleFly and Flip. Now, on to Seth Gross and this conversation that he and I had. We're going to start here where I talked to him about having a clear mission statement and values and standing for something. And, you know, just kind of said, you know, what's behind that and why it's important to you? So, enter Seth. Quote, it's been a slow evolution. When I got out of cooking school, I went to work for some top restaurants and chefs, and I got exposed to a lot of interesting ingredients. At that time, in the early 1990s, farmers markets and CSAs, which are community-supported agriculture, were in their infancy. The exposure to these ingredients made me start to question some things. As I would meet some of these farmers and see ingredients roll in the back door, I would say, "So this is what this looks like?" Someone would explain to me exactly why these tomatoes look different than what I was used to seeing. Then I went to tastings and it all started clicking. I started to really question a lot about our food system. Then you start reading, and that's always dangerous because you start learning. And then you realize, wait a second, what I'm doing is not good. I started learning about high fructose corn syrup and the possible detrimental effect to our health from that. And then trans fats. Then people like Michael Pollan started writing books, and I started reading that stuff, and it all sort of came together. Then the pivotal moment for me, like with a lot of folks, was having kids. Then you start thinking about, what is it that I'm doing that's going to make their future brighter and better? What am I going to leave behind? I started thinking that we simply cannot enable the food system we have. Every week, I have a food tour, and I preach for about 15 minutes, and I warn people that there's a low point. And when you think we're there, we're actually not. It gets worse. Then I bring people back up and say, there's hope. And that hope is pasture-raised beef. We simply cannot continue on the path that we have. We feed America using so much corn, either through corn syrup and things like that in our diet, or through feeding livestock and all the hormones and antibiotics that go with that. It's literally killing us slowly. I don't want to enable that. I wanted to make a difference. The one thing that people do every day in our world is eat. If I want to affect change in my community, food is a great vehicle to make that voice. So we're not preachy except for that Saturday sermon. We just sort of say, hey, we feature pasture-raised beef. If people are willing to ask, well, why? Then it gives me an opportunity to expand on that and give them some information. Most people come away saying, wow, I had no idea. I wish someone had told me that. I know it's hard. As a former user, you can't quit overnight, but you start at home. You start making changes in your diet. Then slowly, as you go out, you start to question where your food came from. If enough consumers out there questioning these things and asking chefs to make changes in their menus and what they do, I think that there's a movement there, and that's what I'm all about. So then I said, well, tell me about the effects of corn-fed beef. And here's Seth, quote, when we started changing cows from feeding on grass to corn, it had an enormous effect on everything in our lives, from our healthcare system to the way cars are built. All of it has been affected by corn. Changing the diet of a cow had a huge impact on our health, because when a cow eats corn, you have higher saturated fat, higher cholesterol, lower linoleic acid, lower omega fatty acids, and those two things fight cancer. In America, we have more obesity, cancer, heart disease, strokes, and diabetes than any nation on the planet, and a big part of that is definitely the meat that we've been eating. It's been a slow erosion of our health. We didn't see these effects prior to the 70s when we moved to start feeding cows corn. I remind people that our beef is banned in the European Union. It is against the law to feed a cow corn in Europe. You cannot take American beef to Europe. It's forbidden. In Europe, they simply do not have that amount of health problems that we have, especially because of our meat and the amount of corn that's in people's diets. End quote. And I said, I bet most people have no clue about this. And enter Seth. Absolutely. For 40 years, it's how we've been raised and what we've done. It's a paradigm shift for folks to think about. And I said, but you stand for more than just pasture-raised beef. And Seth says, quote, correct. At Bull City Burger and Brewery, we're kind of the restaurant that doesn't have tomatoes in January on our burgers because you can't grow tomatoes locally in January. I've seen emails praising that and saying how amazing it is. I've been sent emails praising that and saying how amazing it is. I can't believe you stand for that. This is so great. And I've had an equal number of people tell me they will never come back to the restaurant. They will never eat here again. I hate this restaurant because you don't have tomatoes in January. And I say, well, the tomatoes are mealy, they're hard, and they don't taste good. I've literally had customers say to me, I don't care. A tomato belongs on a burger. At the heart of that is how we have become as a society and a culture. We have become enabled to think food should be available all the time, year-round, no matter what we want. There isn't a blame necessarily on people for that. We have huge food companies that have completely changed the American diet and have absolutely manipulated what we eat and how we do because it was easy for them. So it's funny how a lot of people kind of accepted that corn isn't always available. It's a seasonal food. It's a summer thing. We look to sweet corn when it's delicious eating corn in the summer. We don't necessarily expect it unless it comes out of a can in January, but with tomatoes in America, you should have something red in your salad 12 months of the year. Otherwise, there's something wrong with your restaurant. It's just not how nature works. We definitely need to educate people. When you pose a question to people and say, look, Thanksgiving comes once a year. Christmas comes once a year. It's just how it is. You kind of joke and sort of lead them to the understanding that with your food, there's advantages to eating seasonally. You get to look forward to things that are really exciting and delicious when they're in season. Then you don't get bored of things. When strawberries are in season, I gorge on them for about 6 to 8 weeks, and they're really delicious and good. And after that, strawberry season is over. And there's something else that's coming around the corner. You get all excited about that. But strawberries are not something we should be eating year-round. You look at how does that get to the table in January, and it doesn't taste good anyway. There's a real kind of aha moment for some people when they go, you know, I never thought about that, end quote. So I said, well, what toppings do you use during the winter months? Seth, quote, it gets hard. At Pompieri Pizza, we joke that if you like Brussels sprouts, you're going to love it here in the winter because we do a lot of Brussels sprout pizzas and these kale pizzas and things that do well in this colder weather. That's just how it is. If you come in February and you think you're going to see zucchini and tomatoes on a pizza, it's just not going to happen. We just aren't going to do that. We're trying to work with local farmers. I like that food should be traceable, that you know it's accountable. We use different things to make that point. At Bull City, it's the tomatoes. Granted, we still have caramelized onions on the menu, but we simply cannot just get rid of everything that isn't seasonal, such as garlic and onions. We just use tomatoes as a way to communicate that message. But for the most part, on a burger, most of the things that we have are grown locally. Lettuce can be grown in the winter in the greenhouse. I'm kind of finicky that way, too. Yes, you can find tomatoes that are local in January, except they're grown in a greenhouse using fossil fuels and they don't taste good. I just won't support that. But lettuce is something that can grow without fossil fuels in greenhouses. So it's a fine line. It strikes a debate. What is local? You want to open up a can of worms, you start talking about what is local. I live in Durham. Our restaurants are in Durham. If I buy lettuce in Durham, we would all pretty much agree that's local. If I go a few miles towards Raleigh and we buy lettuce, is that local? A lot of people would say, yeah, that's still pretty local. Some people would say, well, that's not so local. If we go several hours away to Wilmington, is that local? Well, now it's not so local. Where do you draw that line? If I want coffee beans, there's no North Carolina coffee beans. We've got to go to South America for coffee. Drawing these lines is a crucial thing. At the end of the day, I have to go to sleep at night and think about what I am comfortable with and where I can draw those lines. There are some things I simply won't compromise on. For instance, I will close the restaurant before I serve corn-fed beef. There's no gray area for me there. I know the farmers that I get our beef from. I've walked these farms. I've seen them. I've seen the cows. I've dined with these farmers at their table and at our restaurant. The relationship is solid, and we're all committed to the same movement, and that's really important. And I said, I admire your approach. It's clear you stand for something. And Seth says, quote, you can't be everything to everybody. There are restaurants that try to do that. If you try to do that, good luck. That's a tough road to go. You end up having to cut corners and compromise because simply trying to please everybody is just a losing proposition to me. There are the menus, typically at a diner or something, where it's a 17-page plastic thing that you flip through and they serve breakfast all day long, lunch all day, dinner all day. You've got to wonder just how fresh it is and if they're serving omelets and meatloaf and spaghetti and pancakes and all those things. But if you like burgers, we make 28 different toppings in-house. The hot sauce, the Worcestershire sauce, the sriracha, mayonnaise, mustard, barbecue sauce, everything but the ketchup is literally made in the restaurant. With that, you got a lot of options. We have a number on the website, and it's just kind of a weird number that sits out on some of the pages. It says 67,108,864. That's the number of hamburgers you can make with 28 different toppings. So if you like burgers, you're in the right place. At Pompieri Pizza, we do wood-fired Neapolitan-style pizzas. That's about it. We have a few appetizers. We make gelato. But it really wasn't about, hey, let's add pasta to it, and let's do panini sandwiches and ravioli and all these things. I want to make really good burgers, and I want to make really good pizza, and that's what we stand for. I'd rather do quality over quantity. That has always been the mission. If you're not in the mood for pizza, that's okay. Hopefully you are next week or the week after that and you'll come in. I just don't want to have the steak and fish entree and all these different things, because as soon as you dilute the menu, I feel like quality begins to drop. And my next question was, is it hard to find staff who believe in your mission? And Seth says, quote, first of all, the staff is absolutely one of the best things about these restaurants. They are fantastic folks who work really hard. They do believe in the mission. Those who come on board know how we do something with our food, but they're not real sure. And after a short period of going through some training and sitting with me and learning, it's a pretty remarkable transformation. We have an employee who talks about how she had gone to a family picnic after working with us for a year. At the family picnic during the summer, they were making burgers. She took one bite of the burger and couldn't eat it. Now, this is a girl who probably shops at Food Lion and had never in her life considered where her food came from. But just being an employee and eating our food on a regular basis, she started to make the transformation for herself and her children. I think that's a really powerful thing. The employees are just fantastic in what they bring to the table, how they become so passionate about the mission and sharing it, and how they're willing to educate customers and what they're learning. End quote. You have to admire a business that's willing to take a stand and tell customers that are adamant their burger should have a tomato in January, that's not how you roll. This episode was done in 2016. We published this Restaurant Owner's Part 2, our second book, in 2017. And I was just fascinated with the way Seth and his team run their business and their willingness to take those stands and be bold and sleep well at night, knowing that, you know, that each day they're trying to make things a little better and healthier for themselves and their families and their customers. Not everybody is able to do this. Some business models just don't work. And maybe you've got to have corn-fed beef, and hey, that's okay. For Seth, it's not okay. But what I really admire is the big picture, that taking a stand in believing something is so important to the point that he would close his restaurant before serving a corn-fed beef. Wonderful advice. Great guy. If you happen to be in Durham, his places are fantastic. Check him out. And thank you for listening. We've got some actual recorded episodes coming up in the next week or two. We've got several lined up. So thank you all for listening, and more coming soon. See you.